Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk About It with Shania Kelly, a podcast where every opinion matters. I'm a 20-something master's social worker based in the Lehigh Valley of Pennsylvania. I bring to you an open and collaborative space where I give voices to the unheard and the unknown on important social topics. So please join me in this space and let's talk about it. Today's episode is the part three, so the last episode in our mini-series on today's social climate. I will be speaking with two amazing and experienced social workers, and honestly, this was an amazing conversation for me, so I hope that it is also of great value to you too. So let's tune in and let's talk about it. Hi, everyone. So we have a new group of ladies speaking with me today, and I'm so excited to have this conversation on social topics and what is most important to us and what it means to our future as well. So I have Sharon and Nakia here with me. Nakia, would you like to give a little introduction on yourself?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Shania. I am Nakia Gore. Yeah. I'm an LCSW down in Douglasville, Georgia. Oh, nice. And that's about 45 minutes outside of Atlanta.
Okay.
So kind of metro Atlanta-ish. And I have been in the mental health social services field since 2000.
Amazing.
Yeah, for a long time. So these chubby cheeks don't really reflect my age, right? And so I retained my MSW in 2011 and became fully licensed in 2015 and have been doing therapy work since then. But I've done a lot of hospital, psychiatric hospital work and community mental health clinic work in my career.
Okay, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. And Sharon, if you would like to give a little intro.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me as well. I have been a social worker since 1990 and actually graduated with my MSW from Georgia.
Oh, wow. Nice. So far, I haven't had anyone that's like from the same area. So this is kind of cool.
I started as a LCSW I got licensed up in Chicago, traveled around the world using my LCSW, went throughout Africa and India and Europe and America and South America as well, and obtained my doctorate in 2011. And then now I am recently promoted to Associate Director of Programming for a Behavioral Health Wraparound Facility in North Carolina, Raleigh.
Wow. That is amazing. As someone who is kind of new to being in an MSW role, speaking with the both of you is really inspiring to me. So thank you for, you know, being in social work and paving the way for new graduates like myself.
Thank you.
So let's get into our conversation today. So as two women who have been in the field for so long, I'm sure that you have a pretty strong perspective on some of the questions and some of the things that we'll talk about today. So for you, what kind of social issues do you feel are the most pivotal right now in the state that the world is currently in?
I think for me, the most broad and generalized concept right now is hatred and versus acceptance. And it kind of permeates every single thing that we're seeing throughout the world. Kind of the empowerment of being okay just hating people. Right? And it brings such negativity on top of, you know, all the other things that are going on with diseases and things like that, that I think that it compounds mental health issues.
Right. And you've definitely
made a great statement to kind of generalize how things are going, where I feel like a lot of times we focus on events and it could be hard to conceptualize it. And I think using the word hate is very strong, but it is a good reflection of maybe a great majority of the emotions that are going on for both sides of whatever situation it might be that's, you know, being discussed at the time.
Mm-hmm. Really, really, I really like the way you made that broad, Sharon. Maybe we're going to have a good conversation here, because I went down into sort of the more nuanced ways that we could look at hatred versus acceptance. So thank you for framing it that way. I was thinking about this for our conversation today, and Shanae, the list just kind of got a little bit longer than I wanted it to.
It does get long, yes.
I looked at about five areas that I think are affecting my clients, mm-hmm. and myself, and just the community at large. And so I'll rattle those off and we can go where we want to go with those. But
yes, thank you.
Topic, yeah, that came to my mind was politics.
Mm-hmm.
Also race relations.
Yes.
Human rights and women rights, I think, are really affecting, you know, the social climate right now. Financial security, whatever mm-hmm. that means to each individual person.
Right.
And then job satisfaction. I think that's something that always affects people, but I think it was brought into our heightened awareness when the pandemic started. People really started reflecting upon and talking about and making decisions about meaningful work, job satisfaction, and how that mm-hmm. affects them individually and their families. And so those are the five areas that I came up with.
And I think that's pretty. Yeah, go ahead.
I think that's pretty comprehensive. Exactly. Yeah.
And I know for myself, so I previously worked as a mental health case manager, and now I'm working in a different kind of population where I work in a workforce employment location. So I can definitely resonate where you're speaking of having that employment satisfaction and a lot of people struggling with that. And I think that ties into the Great Resignation. I don't know if you guys have heard that coined term yet. But I think it's difficult to understand sometimes, because from the employee side, it's like, okay, you're able to take a chance on yourself and find what you're really looking for. But then on the employer side, it's like, okay, we really need whomever to come in and work for us. And it questions whether we're making sure that there is quality work for people to do, no matter what field it is. I know for a fact in the social work field by me, a lot of times the quality of work, your environment is not there in terms of the services that you're trying to give. So you don't feel supported by your employer. And then it goes into the amount of turnover that you have and not having that retention rate that you're looking for. And that also ends up hurting the clients and the people that you serve. So the things that you mentioned, I have definitely experienced in the area that I live in, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You touched on the work satisfaction, job satisfaction, and, you know, working with peers that are competent and qualified and all of those things. And then I'm sure that affects financial security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, social workers start to think about, is this the right agency for me? Do I want to continue to work towards whatever your long-term goal is?
Right.
How does that affect me financially? You know, in the South, where speaking about the largest two racial groups in the South, Black and white people, we've lived together for quite some time, but that doesn't mean there's this trust and understanding and inclusive aspect to work. And so there can be this hostility and suspicion and all these things that happen, and that affects a person's financial security. And then, you know, politics are really, really big in the South. Georgia turned from a red state to a blue state, which most people wouldn't have imagined happening in their lifetime. So it's all pretty interconnected.
Yes.
Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Also,
the assumptions that we interact with the world on is very impactful. And you know, I used to teach as a professor over at one of the HBCUs here. And because I wanted to, my children are adopted. One is African American. My older one is African American. My younger one is Haitian American, and which is basically African American. But I made it my mission to actually, as best I can, replicate what it was that it felt like to be a minority in the world. And so I entered this world where it was an HBCU and I was the minority. Now, mm-hmm. obviously, it's not like I can't change the color of my skin or anything, but I made it my mission to the best I can, kind of understand where my children were coming from and what they were experiencing and things like that. And it kind of facilitated me going over to Africa as well and traveling.
Okay. Okay. Do you feel like through that experience or through your experiences in social work in general, because the majority of the time we are working with individuals that are from, you know, minority populations. Mm-hmm. With that, do you feel like being a parent figure, raising children who are from the minority when you, I don't want to assume, you know, where you're from or where, where you come from, but you may possibly be part of those majority populations that you're kind of able to give them the tools that they need to navigate in this world safely and competently?
Well, that's a really good question. And up in Chicago, I was actually considered the like foster care guru or whatever. Right. We made it our mission to educate our children to have self-esteem and self-concept. Mm-hmm. And so what we did was for my son, who's the oldest, we found African-American people to mentor him. And we found African-American women to sit and, you know, kind of tell the stories to my daughter while they were doing her hair. And so it was about kind of, it takes a village, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, one of the things that I would love to see, and I know that's one of your questions, what I would love to see is that if foster care, and we all know it's a broken system, mm-hmm. right?
No matter where you're at.
that is exactly right. If it is to improve the classes that involve multiracial matching, mm-hmm. Really needs to impart on the foster parents what is happening with these children and what it feels like to constantly be moving and not know where you are and
right.
all of these things. And so so understanding everybody's perspective is really important in everything, right? Like,
yes. I mean,
it's absolutely my passion to go and actually live the life of the people who I help.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate for that. I think that definitely allows you to be able to empathize for anyone that you're working with, and specifically, you know, for your children and what kind of experiences that they will have that you may not have experienced. So I appreciate you, you know, for being a foster parent and taking those extra steps to make sure that you can, you know, resonate with your children on things that they may be going through and making sure that they have a connection, you know, to the community that they may resonate with the most. So thank you for that. And I'm glad to hear that you're a part of, you know, the foster care system and making sure that other people are making those same kind of intentional actions as well. And I appreciate you for answering the question very transparently too.
Sure.
So
of living your work, Sharon.
Yes. 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 So with the things that are going on today, and most importantly, the five topics that you mentioned, because of how they work together so strongly, unfortunately, not in the best way for us, but do these things affect your perception of the future at all for what's to come?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. mainly for my son, which is kind of reflecting upon that question again as you answered it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being an LCSW, job opportunity are unlimited. I actually touch my private practice, I touch a group practice, I touch a hospital system still, all within a week's time. So it's not with about opportunities, it's about choosing the right opportunities, and then right. Can you manage those opportunities? There's far more work than a social worker or a group of
yes.
could ever do. But when I think about the future for my son, who just turned 13, I really think about what I would want for him in his future. What are his strengths? What is going to help him to have good financial security? What's going to allow him to have good emotional and mental health?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really kind of proud of myself that I don't know if that's going to mean higher education
or right.
traditional college. So it affects how I think about his future and the future of his friends and cousins and, you know, younger people. I feel like I'm about halfway done with my life, probably, right? Maybe, to be honest with my age. But I certainly think about how the social climate affects younger people, and mm-hmm. really that would even include you, Shania, if I
can. Yes you can. It's definitely difficult. So for myself, because of financial reasons, you know, I put myself through my college career, so with that, I currently still live with my parents, and I think it's challenging because I always see, of course, people being able to buy a house and people being able to just live on their own in apartments and et cetera, which is really, really great. And I wish I could do the same, but I know for a fact that I would have had to take out tons of loans to be able to take care of my MSW because I somehow ended up in a private school. So it's hard. And it makes me think about, you know, the future when I have children. So like, if things continue how they are going, does it get harder? Or I hope that it does end up getting better. I feel like in some ways we have improved, but there's always still that extra layer of hatred versus acceptance that we're all constantly going through, where it's hard to see those little steps that we have made towards something better. So at my age of 25, I've seen lots of different pivotal things happen that I'm sure many of people have not expected to seen or be a part of. So I think my generation is definitely going through a lot of things that I hope, you know, is able to be a positive lesson in some way for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well said.
You know, I have a question for both of you guys. So back in the day when I was a little girl, in New York, going to school, we used to have like bomb, just like you would have a fire drill now in mm-hmm. school. We used to have bomb like drills.
Yes.
And we used to have, right. And we used to have to go out in the hallway, and the USSR was like the boogeyman out there. Right. Mm-hmm. But we didn't have the social media aspect of mm-hmm. hearing everything in our face all the time, right? Like Tom Brokaw would come on the TV and have this totally like deadpan kind of face, but people trusted what he was saying, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm wondering if having all of these perspectives kind of come at us, whether things have actually changed, or is it just in our face so much more and has been empowered politically, you know, kind of thing, where now the veil has been taken off to a greater extent, you know, because, I mean, we all know, right, like, we all know racism and, you know, all of the biases out there.
Right.
It's existed forever, right?
Mm-hmm. Like,
and so I would even kind of wager in Alabama and Mississippi and places like that, where we don't call it slavery anymore, but
mm-hmm.
we could call it a rose, but it's still, you know,
right,
taking advantage of people, right? And so, you know, that's my question, is I'm wondering whether, you know, social media and having all of this information is actually, whether you would consider it good or bad, right? Like,
I think there is always like a two-sider when it comes to something like that, because it's good to be able to receive things, but it's also bad to receive too much and to receive so much of the wrong information. And I think that's what it comes down to a lot of the times, whether you're allowing yourself to hopefully maybe do a little bit of extra research when you see that, you know, big title of whatever it may say, instead of kind of like taking it and running with it without even looking at the article, without even looking for other extra sources, which I'm sure most people don't do. So I think having access to information is important, because I'm sure there are many of things that we don't know that is pivotal information now, like financial literacy and so many other things.
Yes.
YouTube University exists now, and so many people have gained skills just by going on there, you know, free information. But I also think that it's very overwhelming too, because you're constantly receiving information. Most of the time, it's more bad than good. So it makes it very hard, and it makes it hard to choose whether you want to like disconnect or if you feel like you still need to be plugged in, and if there's even a balance to that also.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I don't know how to answer that. Because I remember, Sharon, when my great-grandmother would watch the news early in the morning at 6 p.m. And then I think it came on again maybe at 11 p.m. in Georgia, right?
Yeah.
It came on like three times a day. And most folks would catch it in the morning or the evening, however their schedule allowed. And people seemed far less anxious, far less hostile, far less aggressive, but absolutely racism was a thing. So if you were talking to my mom, who is mid-60s right now, she'd say that it's the same, it's just more in your face now.
Okay.
It's what she would say. It's what I've heard her say. I think the other thing that's made it feel more intense is that there's a larger population of immigrants in the United States that are in areas that they weren't in before. And full disclosure, my husband is an immigrant, so I don't say that with any type of
mine as well.
I use the term correctly. Born in another country and lives here.
Right.
That's also impacted my practice and the group practice that I work at. And I think that there are some clinicians that just aren't really prepared. Have no concept of awareness of what that process is like, being born in another country, living in this country, and being sandwiched in between two cultures. So when I was growing up in the 80s, the conversations were often about black and white. Now conversations are being had about Hispanic Americans and Asian immigrants and Asian Americans. And there's a whole range of people. I've seen now three Nigerian clients in my practice, learning a lot about that culture, which is great, which I found out I actually have ancestry back to Nigeria.
Oh, wow, nice.
It's really cool. So it almost seems like some of the hostility shifts from one group to another group.
Yeah.
Yeah. And social media can be great, I think, at highlighting the positive aspects of what's going on in the world. I think social media's algorithm sends you what you tend to look at.
Yes, very true.
Is a different story. The news is there to get you, there's sort of a fear factor that's built into the news, which I think people should be a bit mindful of, how much of that you let in and how it's affecting your emotional and mental health. So I guess, Shania, I'm going to come back and agree with what you said. There are good and bad parts of it, but I think the key is that we got to be intentional about it.
Absolutely. I don't know, Nikia, how old you are, but back in the day, like when there were no computers and the same conversation was happening with TV, right? Like, are you going to, right? Like the harms of TV. But TV was great back then. We had the PBS and Sesame Street and all of these other things.
You're so right. TV like raised me. I was a latchkey kid for part of my life. things from TV, from songs to TV shows where I was like, that's like my family. This family's not like my family, to movies. It helped me to dream. Like, I love pop culture. You're right. But there were those conversations about MTV and VH1.
Right.
And, you know, all of those things. So I think you're right. That's a good point, Sharon. It gets, for each generation, there's a bad guy in the
picture. Let's take a quick moment to listen to the ads that keep this show going, and then we'll get right back into the episode. If you're interested into getting into holistic healing, I invite you to check out my dear friend, Jess Kay's Healings. Jess is a Reiki master, integrated energy therapist, oracle card reader, and a certified hypnotherapist. She's passionate about her work and has a variety of services for you and your family and friends. So check out her information in the show notes. Save yourself that trip to the market with Instacart. Instacart delivers groceries in as fast as 1 hour. I've used them a few times now, and it has been really helpful for me when I need groceries, but maybe I can't make that trip or I'm not really feeling like traveling that day. They connect you with a personal shopper in your area, and they hand select and deliver your groceries from your favorite stores. They're connected to all the favorite places that I go to in my area, and I'm sure they're connected to yours too. Following the link in the show notes lets Instacart know that we sent you, that you support our show, and it also gets you free delivery on your first order over $35. Today is a great day to start your own podcast. Whether you're looking for a new marketing channel, have a message you want to share with the world, or just think that it'd be fun to have your own talk show, podcasting is an easy, inexpensive, and fun way to expand your reach online. Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed in all the major podcast directories like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and so much more within minutes of finishing your recording. Podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners. And the team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed. Join me and thousands of other podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world using the link in the show notes. And back to the show.
Yeah.
Music was the bad guy at one point. Social media can be used as the bad guy now. But it depends on how we're using it as to whether mm-hmm. it's good or bad.
That's right. I agree.
Right, right. And for you, Sharon, is there anything in particular that kind of influences your perception of the future?
Well, I mean, my grandchildren, right? Like, I have two granddaughters. So we adopted our children at 2 weeks old each. Oh, and okay. Now they have grandchildren.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
you know, and so I am concerned about things like mental health issues that come with oppression. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny that you brought this up, Nakia, because I had run a pilot group for the 1.5 generation people. And so in the research, the 1.5 generation is children who were born in America of immigrant families, okay. or so they were raised American, but they still have immigrant parents, and they too have special mental health considerations with anxiety, and they, you know, that feeling of tug of war with your authentic self, being loyal to the traditions of the old country, mm-hmm. but trying to fit in to a culture that sometimes it's really hard to fit into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That kind of brings up a a question for me as someone who's new into social work. This is just a question that I'm interested in receiving the perspective from the both of you as being seasoned social workers. Is there anything that you feel that we could be doing to improve our cultural competence or awareness to make sure that we are being mindful of the populations that we're working with to help them in the best way?
So back in the University of Georgia, way back when, when I was attending, they spoke so much. It was like hit on a brick on the head, right? Immersion. And, you know, I had the opportunity to travel in order to do that, but you don't really have to travel, right? Like, you can immerse yourself in, I recommend going to every single church in the area, right? Like, whether it's Muslim or a mosque, or here we have Hindu temples, we have Quaker temples, we have all kinds of stuff, and going, because that's huge, right? Like, that's a huge component for everyone in the world. It also allows you to see and meet people who are will kind of be the point people for in the community, and so they tend to grasp onto you because, you know, you're not like them, and so they want to learn about you as well. And so it turns out to be a really nice cultural exchange.
Thank you.
Totally. And I'm so glad Metro Atlanta is becoming a diverse place. Food is another great way to connect.
Yes,
absolutely. Right?
You're mentioning of the temples, because my family went and visited a Hindu temple and learned about that. I've researched Quakers. So I'm kind of interested in going and having the silent service with Quakers. And I guess just being curious about life is a good thing.
Right.
But food is often a bridge. You know, whether it's beyond, you know, soul food that we love to have occasionally, not all the time.
Yeah, we can't have it all the time.
but we've gotten into sushi recently, and my husband likes to watch these food shows. And then, you know, there's an area called Gwinnett County, north of Atlanta, and it's got a large Hispanic population there. And so that's really cool. And so I just like going to different places where people live and just making eye contact with people and picking up a word or two. You're right, Sharon. I would love to travel the way Sharon's traveled.
Yeah, me too.
But just talking to people, and I like the in the case conference group that I do with the group practice, I have to be honest, a couple of case conferences I was horrified. I'm the only person of color in the case conference. And so when clients sometimes mention, a client mentioned to a therapist, well, you wouldn't, at the end of a session, she's reported, well, you wouldn't understand because you're white. The therapist took great offense at that. And I didn't view it as something offensive, although I empathize as to why she might. What I think the client was trying to say is there's an experience that you don't know, and there's some disconnect. And I have to say, I felt like this sense of responsibility and heaviness to jump in and go, here's how I heard this.
Right.
I have moments of disconnect with clients at all times. Look at it this way. If a male client said, well, I'm a man, so you don't know what it's like to be a father, I'd go, I don't. What is it like to be a father? Right.
Yes. That's right.
Perfectly said. Yes.
Right. We get so trapped and defensive about not knowing. Just don't sometimes know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know?
And, you know, asking the questions, I always found that, you know, I come from a client-centered CBT kind of integration of therapy. And asking the questions and allowing yourself to be vulnerable, not knowing, and then allowing the patient or the client or whoever it is to be empowered and answer the doctor's question.
Air quotes, right, Sharon? The
doctor. Yeah, that's right.
Expert's question. Now, to Shania's point earlier, there are things that I will never know about growing up in Nigeria, even mm-hmm. though I am 25% Nigerian. I just won't know that. Never lived there, never set foot there, have not had that experience. Probably got some cute Nigerian features, all that kind of stuff. But when my Nigerian clients say to me, well, Nakia, I got West African parents and let me tell you how they are. I'm like, tell me, how are they?
Right, yes.
Okay, so I've learned that. Third client, now I go, ooh, I wonder if we're going to talk about what her West African parents are like, right? Okay.
That's right.
So, but I then have a responsibility to go, I don't know these things, so where can I get additional training?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's okay to not know, but then responsibility kicks in and goes, I need to get some more understanding and training from a West African nurse practitioner that I know, right? So a CEU that I need to take.
Right.
So it's okay to not know. That shows that you're competent and your awareness that you don't know, but you then have a responsibility if you're going to continue to treat that person or people from that population, you do have a responsibility to continue learning.
Absolutely. And that's where the CEUs and you know, where we, the immersion comes in, right? Like mm-hmm. we have to take personal responsibility. I agree. You know, it's interesting because you can learn the culture of Nigeria or any place, right? But each person adapts to the culture differently, right? So even though you have three different people from Nigeria, they could have a totally different experience of living in Nigeria, right?
Right, right.
Just as Shania and I have a totally different experience living in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And this makes me wonder, so I love the kind of conversation that we're having right now and the knowledge that we're able to apply to this conversation. And I wonder, do we feel that, you know, people who are, might not be from a social work background or our kind of field that we're in, are they able to, or how can they develop the same lens where the things that we think about and consider, they can also do the same? Because I feel like if more people have access to the education that we get in social work, that maybe we'd be able to understand or empathize with each other a little bit more. So I guess, how can we help our friends and family be a little bit more understanding of other people's circumstances to hopefully positively impact the social climate of today?
I think approaching everybody with a sense of wanting to learn from them, mm-hmm. right? From the client-centered table, when somebody comes into my sessions, I tell them from every single perspective and every single religion around the world, if you are not the God, you are the human. And that power differential, humanization is the greatest equalizer, because yeah. you may be different, you know, and have a different skill than my skill. So teach me your skill. At least you have the skill of being you, right? And I don't have that skill. So wherever I go, regardless of who I'm seeing and who I'm working with or what country I'm in, it's about kind of making myself approach people just wanting to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I you know, from the first world countries to, you know, in South Africa, I went into the Zulu tribe compounds and simply sat on the floor, on a dirt floor, and watched the family just do things. And as the children came and the animals came around me and things like that, we started playing, and then the families would come and stuff like that. If I walked into a Zulu family compound, I am the American and I know all things and I have lots of money, right? Like these people didn't care less,
right?
Right. But I was there to learn, and they were open to having me and learn from me, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, I love that. There's a part of what you're talking about, Sharon, that's modeling, and mm-hmm. That is so powerful. We think about that as parents and grandparents. You can give lip service all day. Session. You can, I say to someone, they'll say, someone asked me last week, how do I do this? A very direct question. And I say, well, I could throw interventions at you all day long, but let's walk through this together. And maybe we'll pick up something, you'll pick up something from what I'm saying, a story that I've told you that you can model in your everyday life, right? You can Google social work interventions. That's not why you do a therapy session.
Right.
So, you know, I think being, you know, transparent about some of the things that you've learned, I say, you've heard me mention, I talk to someone who, and I say to people, in the 22 years that I've talked to people, what I found is, trying to show them this nugget of what has worked for other people, right, with the hopes that they can model that without me wagging my finger at them. That doesn't feel good. How else can we change it? I think is sort of what I was mentioning in the case conference. Believe it or not, I'm not a big talker in groups. I like individual sort of one-on-one conversations, but I felt a sense of responsibility over the last couple of years to speak up. For clients of color, Black clients, immigrant clients, minority clients, even if it makes me feel uncomfortable doing it. And it's not fair. I have to deal with the emotionality of it afterwards. Did I say it right? How did it land? But I don't feel right having the privilege of being in these healthcare spaces. I no longer feel right having the privilege of being in these spaces and allowing people to talk at people of color, at people that are financially disadvantaged, you know, at new social workers. You have things to say. Just because we've been in the field for a long time doesn't mean you won't teach us things. I no longer feel comfortable sitting in spaces and allowing other people to talk at people. So sometimes it's stepping out of the discomfort and just giving it a go and dealing with how it lands.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm sure that that will be very powerful for many of people, because I also resonate with the kind of feeling responsible for making sure that we can speak up for others who might not be able to speak up for themselves, especially in the spaces that we're able to be in as social workers. We really are able to make a difference. And even just as people in general, you don't have to have a title to be able to advocate for other people or speak up for other people. Just as a person, we all have that power, and I hope that we all feel empowered to be able to do that as well. And with some of the things that we talked about, do you guys feel like we have the power and ability to make a difference in some of these social challenges that we're seeing today?
I definitely do. I think that, you know, my perspective when I reflected and I went to adopt my children was, you know, there was a huge contingency that was anti-Caucasian people adopting African Americans because they thought that it was kind of like a racial, like, cleansing kind of thing. And I totally get that. On the other hand, the disparity of children in the foster care roles is just so enormous that I felt like if I could become aware and make my, create these biases and counter them, right? And we've had Muslim exchange students in our house. We have just tried and tried to learn, right? And so I feel like that's kind of where we make a difference, is not only modeling but going out and rolling up your you know, sleeves and getting working besides people, right? Like, that was the greatest experience ever, is getting dirty and sweaty and helping people build schools and do things. You know, it doesn't have to be a huge monumental impact that you're making. It's almost like dropping a stone in water and seeing the things expand. It's kind of that. And I think that's what social work is you touch the people that you can touch and make little differences. And hopefully those make a greater and greater impact in society.
Yes, yes.
I echo that. It feels like it's on an individual level, which is obviously going to touch some family systems, and families are going to touch other families. So it can feel individual or micro level or small on a regular basis, but I hope that it is having a greater impact on the community at large. I guess I mentioned Georgia turning blue, voting, you know, as primarily a Democratic state in the last major election. And so I guess that is evidence that a couple of individual people can make bigger changes, you know, whatever your political beliefs are. I think when things change politically, that's showing us something about how individual people feel. So we want it to be bigger, at least I do at times, but you make an impact where you can.
Right, right.
And I think that's huge, right? Like, because I think people that are not social workers, for instance, or teachers, right? I think they get discouraged because they think that, you know, oh, well, I'm only going to help this one person or this one group, and that's not going to do anything for the great thing. And so getting that information out there is important in that, you know, it is like dropping a pebble in water, right? Like, it grows. And so you never know what the impact is that you're going to have on the greater, who these people are going to touch and who, you know, all of that exponentially.
Thank you. Thank you. This has really been a great conversation. Is there any last points that come to mind that either of you would like to kind of disclose about the social climate, about this topic today?
I think one of the things that I've noticed, as you mentioned, social media, Shania, is that my father was military. So when I was young, we grew up around everyone. It was just, we saw everyone. And so politics were not as much of the center of attention growing up, teen years. Maybe in my 20s, I started to be more aware of it, cognizant of it. But my friends look like all the different colors of the rainbow. And then, you know, about 6 years ago, things hit this head and things got very intense, at least from my perspective. But I was able to take a step out and go, I have some friends and I don't know their political affiliation and I don't really want to know because we can interact with people on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis and for the most part get along, work together, care about each other's kids, have cake at a birthday party, and it is not as impactful as people think. And so do politics matter? Absolutely. How people vote, the policies that they make, they absolutely matter. But that doesn't have to impact or limit or change how you interact with people in your community on a day-to-day basis, unless they're doing things to violate someone's human rights. Now, that's my caveat, right? You can't go out and physically assault someone. You cannot go out and verbally accost someone. You can't say these children can't go to school here. That's a deal for me. But you having a different political affiliation does not mean that I can't reach for the sugar in the grocery store and hand it to you. So I hope we start to sort of dial that down a bit and go, we're just people interacting and we have these ideas about how the world's should be and politics and the government should be, but it doesn't have to so greatly impact our interactions. And that, I think, can help like decompress the hostility in the social climate.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, right? Because I think that different doesn't mean better or worse, right? Like different just means different. And so, you know, accepting that and not wanting to change somebody's mind, which is where the conflict comes from, but learning from them, right? Like, great, you're different, you think differently. I already know. I don't need somebody to agree with me because I already know what I know. Teach me what you know, right? And if we all went with that, I think acceptance would come much easier.
I definitely agree. Well, thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me today. This has been a really great and strong conversation. I can't wait for this to be shared with everyone, for everyone to tune into this. Are there any social media platforms that people can use to kind of get in touch with you or any of the groups and things that you guys spoke of that they can kind of tap into and get connected with?
You're welcome to just look me up on Psychology Today. My first name is Nakia, and it's spelled N-A-K-E-Y-A. Last name is Gore, G-O-R-E. And I also see clients through a group practice called Happier Living. And that website is happierliving.com. And you're welcome to look up myself or any other therapist that you think will be a good fit if you're seeking psychotherapy services.
Thank you so much, Nakia.
And I am an employee of Avance Care, A-V-A-N-C-E, Care. I am on AvanceCare.com as one of the therapists there in the Raleigh-Durham area, as well as on Psychology Today. And so everybody can find me there.
Yes, thank you so much, Sharon. And just to reiterate, you will be able to find the information that they both spoke of, ways to connect with each of them on the website. So thank you so much, ladies, again, for coming and speaking with me. Please take some time to tune into what they have, because if this isn't a great example of the kind of amazing services they can provide, I'm not sure. So I hope that everyone is safe and continues to have a great day. And thank you so much for talking with me about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am looking for fellow podcasters and community members to collaborate with me on episodes for this podcast. So if you're interested in coming on and talking about any of the various social topics that come to mind, please fill out the request form in the description. And if you haven't already, please connect with me on my social media platforms, on my Linktree. There is also a link for a voice message to leave your thoughts and feelings, and they might even get aired on an episode, so don't hold back. Thank you again for talking with me. Bye.